Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
You also become paranoid. I became paranoid around the people that I knew the best, including the people that I was on the show with, including the people that I've since done other shows with.
You might be the person that a friend or a loved one comes to and says, I think I need some help. So we need to know where to turn, don't we? And we need to know that those people will be there for you.
I will state that anyone can do this. You don't need to be in Coronation Street or one of the hairy bikers, because a lot of people ask me that all the time. I'm just really fortunate to have people of profile supporting it.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
And welcome to another edition of Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Thank you again for joining us. We've had some brilliant guests in recent weeks and more great guests to come. Our next guest is Daniel Westwood. Now, Daniel is a TV presenter and actor. You may know him from Coronation Street, from Doctors on the BBC. And he's a guy originally from the Northeast who obviously knows the Northwest very well from working on Coronation Street. Also worked on the likes of CBeebies and has got an incredible story to tell. And he's been on an incredible journey. Dan Westwood, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on the programme.
Hello, thanks for that intro. What an intro, that was lovely.
Yeah, let's hope you live up to it now.
I'm scared now.
Now, Dan, your story's a really interesting one, and the journey that you've been on yourself in regard to your own mental health, but seeing those around you and the difficulties that they've had as well. When you were growing up, what did mental health actually mean?
Do you know what? I'm going to be completely honest. I probably didn't know a thing about it. I think, like a lot of other people, and this, again, it's my opinion, but I think it was almost like people with mental health almost like stayed away from, as in almost like they were crazy, which some people still have that perception now, which is really sad and unfortunate, obviously, because they obviously don't really know much about it, which mental health, the spectrum is gigantic. You can have a little bit of mental health or sadly suffer really, really, really badly towards the end of like the depression scale. But yeah, I'm thankfully I know a lot more now. When I was little, I don't think it was probably not even talked about either, which I think is another big thing now as well, especially in men. And I've said this before, especially in places like the Northeast, where it is a bit of a gritty society, and in men, like obviously with work, the working man, the provider type thing.
I was going to say, it's a real shame, isn't it, that actually our first experience sometimes of knowing about mental health can come when something either impacts on you directly or someone very close to you, and you suddenly have to become an expert on it because, you know, it can take over your life.
Well, yeah, it's like anything. I think really, especially now at these times, I think if we don't know about something, I think it's up to us to engage and research that and look into people's suffering or people's problems, or indeed people's backgrounds, really, obviously, at the moment, which I think and I've always prided myself, the more you know, the better you're going to be for that whatever situation. And I, again, there's a stigma of people not knowing things and hating to ask. I think it's more of it becomes more of a problem with people not asking rather than asking and having. I'm one of them in work as well. I've done it all throughout my career in work. If I don't know something, I will ask, because then tomorrow I'm a bit more educated on the day before. And I think it's the same with anything, like I said before, like mental health, race, sexuality. That person will openly tell you, or they'll be like, look, obviously we don't say this specific word, we say this now. And I think it's only a tool that you can use yourself, like, and educate yourself.
Can I ask you about, in terms of your own personal journey, if you're comfortable in talking about this, can I ask you to talk about the panic attack that you had when you were actually performing, like, on stage?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's quite public knowledge. I've done, obviously, I've spoke about it, and it was mainly just so I understood it, my friends understood it, and mainly just using my job and the little profile that I have to create awareness. So I had a few on a train, which is later on, obviously. It's only now seeing a counsellor and stuff, and we've backtracked things and we've spoken. Again, with the knowledge thing, I now know more about panic attacks because I've openly spoke to a counsellor and a therapist. So, yeah, it was just, I think, I've had them recently as well, like at Christmas. The one that you're referring to, I think, was I work a lot on CBB, so I've done a lot of their live shows and things like that, which I'm very proud to be a part of. I've got lovely friends with them now. A lot of them will probably listen to this, so big shout out to them. But yeah, I was on a couple of years ago now, a few years ago, I was on a tour with them, And I was having, like, I don't know whether you have children yourself or the listeners, if you're a parent, grandparent, uncle, if you've got little ones in your family, CBeebies is life, and it's literally high energetic stuff, especially on stage. So when me as a person, as Daniel, when I'm not feeling, when I wasn't feeling very well, like in intervals or between shows or between venues, I was getting, like, and I use this as an example because I've spoke about it before, but I was on stage doing a high energy show, maybe like a party dance or a sing-along song with the kids. And then I'd come in to the interval, like many actors do, and it's our time to like relax a bit, have a chat, have a cup of tea, whatever. But I was feeling really sad. I was really upset. And I was crying for no reason. And I remember saying to one of the guys, because a lot of people had come in the dressing room to make sure I was okay, because this was an ongoing thing. We were on it was about 5 month tour as well. So you can imagine the pressures of that. And obviously you're around, these people are my friends, but I'm around them every day. So then if I'm quiet or if I'm having a down day, as some people would call it now, or this, even in personal life, if something's gone wrong in your personal life, these are the people that instantly know straight away because they know you inside out, because although they know me on stage as Dan, there's not much of a difference when I'm off stage. But then this time there was, because I was just silent. I didn't want to be around anyone. I locked myself in the dressing room. I just wanted to be there. And I think people started to notice that. And I remember crying to a friend of mine, Just, who works on the show as well, saying, I'm crying, I'm upset, and I don't know why I'm upset. And I was getting, the more I was realising and the more I was ignoring it, which is another key thing, rather than thinking, oh, wait, it's going to pass. I think that manifests a bit more and it builds up and then your breathing starts. On stage, I was fine. You wouldn't have known the difference. But it was only when, I think it's that Doctor Theatre, when you come off stage and you switch off and you're back into your normal self, the same as you are on a soap set or whatever, or a film set. Once you're back to you, then your problems kick in aside from the show. So it was just a buildup of that, really. And then I decided I needed some help, because then one thing that people will know about me is, obviously, you lovely said at the beginning about my career. I'm very blessed to have a really nice career, and I've gone on to do a lot of things. I'm not stopping yet, which is, a lot of people see it, and this is another anxiety thing that I've touched upon recently. A lot of people see me as like, they look up and they go, oh, I wish I could have done this in your career. It's a really fascinating thing that I'm working with a counsellor and therapist, but that's a good thing. But yes, it was affecting my work, which I love, and my career, which I'm sure yourself, once you love something, it's not a job. Do you know what I mean? It's especially with the CBeeb stuff. It's so fun to do. I've got some lovely friends out of it. We are the best of friends. Like we sing on stage in the song Best of Friends, we are the best of friends off stage as well, which is, it sounds really cheesy and annoying to parents and stuff, but it's great. And we're all very good friends off camera and off stage and stuff. So they're with the people that really helped me obviously get through this. Another side of that, which I will talk about it as well, because we can publicly talk about this. It's not my story, but a friend of mine, Sophie, which listeners at home will probably remember her from Love Island. She was a friend of mine and a friend of the some of my friends and stuff in close-knit group. She sadly took her own life after being on that. So that was another wake-up call for me as well, because she was on a show which, obviously, again, like any show like Coronation Street and stuff, you get a lot of attention and stuff like that, which to me it's just seen as a normal job. But I understand it's a thing where in people's living room 5 nights, well, maybe not as much at the moment, but so it's seen as this pressure thing. But then with that comes trolling and a bad side of social media, which I'll say allegedly, because Sophie's obviously not here to argue this, but I know she suffered a lot from trolling, which I have had a little bit in the past. And another thing with anxiety becomes, you also become paranoid. I became paranoid around the people that I knew the best, including the people that I was on the show with, including the people that I've since done other shows with. Do you know what I mean? And even I had a panic attack in a studio, a TV studio as well, which now, thinking back, again, going back to me asking questions about work, I would have, if I was filming that this week and I had a panic attack, I would have asked to stop the filming and maybe got a glass of water or a breath of fresh air.
Can I ask you about that in terms of the environment you found yourself in? If we talk about your own experience, it's so crucial, isn't it? Because anyone can have these experiences, but those experiences can take place in many different types of environment. And I guess, although the CBeeb's family, you talked about, you had people around you at the time who could be there for you, but then there'll be plenty of people as well who will have those experiences but not feel like they're part of a community or a family to help them out. So, you know, I'm not saying in any way, shape or form that, you know, you were lucky to have that environment, but, you know, we're at the behest of those environments at any point, you know, and if you can be terribly unlucky to not have an environment around you, I imagine that a moment of panic or anxiety could actually play itself out in much darker ways down the line if you don't have that support network. And that might come from a family, it might come from a work environment or a TV set or a TV studio, whatever that environment might be.
Yeah, of course. And I am very lucky. There've been times where, like I mentioned, it happened in a TV studio where I didn't acknowledge it and I just got on with the film, and I was interviewing a really famous actress, which now she knows. I've spoken to her about it. The irony is she's now involved in the campaign, but she didn't know any different. But inside my head and my heart was, you know yourself, when you're working and stuff, you're in a work mode. You obviously have to speak. We're going against, although it was, I can't remember whether we were filming it live or not, or was it pre-record? Anyway, but you're going against time, so you've got a job to do. There was another guest waiting to come on. Obviously, it's when you're filming, it's time. So there's a lot of pressure on that. And that was a time where I didn't obviously rely on the people around me, and I kind of just ignored it and shut it away, which now I'm thinking I wouldn't advise anyone to do that, and not necessarily in a TV studio, wherever you are. I've had them on trains and stuff. You can maybe carry a bottle of water with you when we go and have a walk up the train, obviously, because you can't get off on a train unless it's your stop. But yeah, I would advise acknowledging it, not ignoring it, because it's aside to the one where I've got help and not asked for help and ignored it. The asking for help was so much better, and it's a better outcome for yourself and your mind, really, because you can in turn create the panic attack into something bigger, like you said. But if you're on your own, I think there's loads of lovely things available as apps to help you with stuff like that. Obviously, there's the generic, like you can call lots of people like that. There's Mind and people like the Samaritans, which they'll help with little things like panic attacks. Because I think a lot of people think panic attacks are just a minor thing. You're getting stressed because maybe you've had a stressful day, but it is a clinical thing. Like I've had a lot of friends, literally, I've done it myself. I've been to the hospital before as well, but I've had a couple of friends, two of my best friends, that have actually phoned ambulances with chest pains on their left-hand side, thinking they're having a heart attack, which in turn is a panic attack. But it's also, when you get to the hospital, it's just as important to make that trip to the hospital.
Well, absolutely. And I think as much as anything, the campaign that you're working on now represents the support that you're trying to offer for those friends, and about how we can all try and be that support. One of the themes that often comes up on the program, I always say, Dan, that, you know, it might not be you who needs to make contact with organizations like Mind or the Mental Health Foundation or Chasing the Stigma, the Hub of Hope, and those sort of connections, but you might be the person that a friend or a loved one comes to and says, I think I need some help. So we need to know where to turn, don't we? And we need to know that those people will be there for you, which is why Here For You might be a real answer for people. Hashtag Here Number 4 You. There's a Facebook page for this one as well. There's the hashtag which you can use. And Dan's Instagram's got loads of information. I'll give you the directions to that in a few moments' time. Here For You. What was the thinking when you thought of the actual hashtag there? What did you want to get to come through from Here For You?
It kind of does what it says on the tin, just telling people that it was literally the next step after I'd obviously suffered panic attacks, and I'd had an emotional breakdown on tour, and obviously after Sophie. It was mainly, I just wanted to put something nice back onto social media and see how the hashtag is a quick way of spreading something, whether it's good or bad. We see it now, do you know what I mean? Obviously, it's good for good things. It can also be seen as really a bad tool, the internet. Obviously we're on the internet now, so it's a really good way of doing it, do you know what I mean? There is good things about it, but speaking to other people about it, there's a lot of pressures within social media, especially Instagram, so I wanted to put a good message onto it. It came about, I think, I have to recall this story all the time, and quite frankly I can't really remember. I'm sure I was at dinner with my friend, I can't remember who it was, but I wanted to do something, and I say this, and I don't know whether I can say this, but it's a bit like remember the ice bucket challenge.
Yeah,
you record your own video, and it's not necessarily you passing the book or whatever the message on, but it's almost like how I explain it now. It's I suffered myself, and I suffered silently for a while. And a lot of people do, especially men. There's a lot of stigma in opening up. You feel a burden. There's a lot of embarrassment. And that does come with theatrical, outgoing people like myself, because it is very rife in that industry as well. Because another thing as well, people think the loudest people we'll be fine. But it's often, I'm sure you know yourself, it's often not the case. So it was kind of a thing we set up, and it's mainly just a video that you record yourself. And I will state that anyone can do this. You don't need to be in Coronation Street or one of the hairy bikers, because a lot of people ask me that all the time. I'm just really fortunate to have like people of profile supporting it, which again, you know yourself, spreads like wildfire, obviously. So you just record a clip just to say, I'm always going to be here for my friends, my family, anyone suffering, people that, even people that don't know me, if that work colleague at work that I just see, and maybe in the canteen, anyone really. So then that video is put out there. And then say if I did one and then you saw it at home, it'd be like, oh, well, Dan's there, I can maybe pick up the phone for him. So it's almost giving that the olive branch out, or opening the conversation up with a video. And it's just it's a really quick way of doing it, which in the first, I was very lucky. One of my lovely friends, Georgia Taylor, who people will know at home as Toya Battersby in Coronation Street, she did the first ever one. And it was literally, it was just by sheer coincidence that she was the one that posted it first. Now on Twitter, it had over 25,000 like likes overnight, which you can imagine is crazy, because the messages to me, and then the press jumped on that as well, which again, it's great. It's not about, I always say it's not about numbers, but again, numbers in them, in those numbers, it's probably, there's probably a few people that we can help. And I always say, if we can help one person, then we're doing something right. But out of 25,000 people, it's greater now, but I just think that the message is getting shared.
Absolutely. And I think those, you know, we can talk down the numbers or we can dismiss the numbers, but those numbers are individual people who saw something. Now, they may have looked at it for a second or 2 seconds or 10 seconds and thought nothing more of it and never consider it again. But as you say, those one or two people who will then think, oh, who would I turn to in that circumstance? Or have I got a here for you? Or maybe I need to be that person. Then suddenly one, two, three, handful of people, 10 people, you then start, you know, you start developing a movement, don't you? And I think as much as anything, it's about those people coming on board with thinking, I will find out a little bit more about mental health. I will take on maybe a mental health first aid training session. I will continue in terms of that journey. And I think those are that's where you suddenly get a cultural change, where you get people within organisations, within families, within workplaces who educate themselves, who become, you know, almost a first responder in regard to mental health. And that's got to be a really positive thing, because like you say, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that just simply didn't exist. Yeah.
It's really great. I mean, obviously, we're using the tool of the internet, like I said, to spread something really, really fast. And people notice it, like you said, they might notice it. It's always going to be there. They might go back to it. There is a page now, obviously, like you said, I've got Instagram, Twitter, the Facebook. I get messages on my own Facebook, which I don't mind, but I get messages of support. I also get messages of people. Like, I had a message from a lady whose son was really struggling, which obviously at this day, at this time, it is something that I want to go on and do. I'm not a certified counsellor, or I'm not a professional. Something that I'd want to go on and do, but then I'm in a position now, because I've educated myself about the people that can help you, to then pass her numbers on, maybe try the Samaritans, or maybe try this with him, or maybe talk this with him, maybe show him some of the videos from the page, just to, because I think it's great. We've got, look, there's loads of people involved. We've got everyday people involved. We've got people, I am very lucky in my job that I can, that I've got a lot of people that can help, or I can call upon people. But I think especially with children, if they see someone from their favourite TV show, or someone that they've just watched on Coronation Street or Emmerdale or whatever, or Love Island that night, and then they see them opening up just to say, look, guys, I'm here for, it almost feels kind of like personal to them. And then if they're struggling themselves, it's almost thinking, well, so-and-so from Love Island said it's okay to speak out, and I kind of think they're really cool because I like them on Love Island. So maybe I'll go and have a conversation with my mom now or my sister and say, look, I'm not feeling very well. I've got headaches. So it is just, it's loads of different ways how to open that conversation and targeting the different genres of people, if you get an age demographic and things like that.
Absolutely. But if you think back, you know, to back in the day, if you or I were watching Coronation Street, Kevin Webster was going through his divorce with Sally, and at the end of the episode, they went, oh, by the way, if you're really suffering as a result of maybe a marriage breakdown, you're feeling depressed, you know, if then Kevin Webster then says you can reach these organisations, that would have made a huge difference for many different people. Instead, it became this thing where occasionally there'd be a write-up in one of the Sunday newspapers maybe about how this storyline had affected their life. Whereas, as you say, now there's a generation growing up watching a Love Island or a Coronation Street or an ITV2 show or whatever, E4, whatever it's on. Hollyoaks, another good example, whereby suddenly off the back of it, they suddenly go, oh, yeah, this is actually a thing on the TV, but it's also a real life thing. And here's where I can make that connection. And that's definitely a new thing. And that's definitely something that generationally young people are growing up with now in a way that I never grew up with the TV looking like that.
I think it mainly because I think it's at the forefront of our lives as well. It's in media, it's in everything, it's in papers. Obviously, we've got social media now. Obviously, I've mentioned Corrie far too much, but there are lovely soaps there as well. Like that, I watch a lot of them, and they do not just mental health, but they tackle a lot of the spectrum and like bipolar and things like that, addiction, everything like that. The soaps are really, really, really good for that. As our drama things, obviously, we've got a thing ITV at the moment, like obviously to get people talking, which I think is a really great thing. Another thing as well that people think, like people from the TV or people like Ant McPartlin, for instance, I'll just put that on my head, that people like that don't struggle because they've got the sort of perfect life that people on Instagram look at, like, oh, he's a millionaire, he's on TV, he's got this, that, and that. And it's almost the thing of like, what have you got to be unhappy about? Or what, which is another thing I'm trying to like kind of break down in schools as well, because it does. It's like cancer. It is like a cancer thing. It's not going to be picky mental health who it attacks and chooses to live in their head, so to speak.
Well, can I ask you about that growing up in the Northeast, which, you know, an area I know well, and I know that it's a working class area with people who sort of try and talk as you know, as straightforwardly as possible. But at the same time, you'll be known from being on TV. So there'll be this sense, I imagine, from some that you've sort of transcended, you know, your northeastern roots, because you're now, you know, Mr. Big Time with the glitz and glamour of TV work. But you are from that background. You're a product of that background as well. A background which often comes with the, we're a working class. You mentioned the men, the issue. You either go to football at the weekend, you talk in a certain way, you act in a certain way, you man up. And actually, you're flying in the face of all of those things by saying, well, you know, this is my experience. I'm being honest, I'm from the same place as you, and although my life has gone in a different direction, I can offer a sense of perspective on where we should be at, not just as the Northeast, but as the whole of the country.
I think in general, it's just speaking out, isn't it? Regardless of it, I know it's hard, and I am from the Northeast. I'm very proud. I'm actually sat in the Northeast right now in lockdown, so I have to be very careful. Well, I'm going to be saying nice things. I'm proud to be from here. When I'm not here, obviously, obviously the world's gone a bit crazy at the moment, so I'm safe here in lockdown. But I normally live in Manchester, which I love as well, which is another northern town, which is not maybe necessarily the same, but it's got a lot of mentalities. I know it's a city as well, and obviously Newcastle's the same as well. But it is that working background, and obviously going back again with a counsellor, obviously you backtrack on your past and that. I've always wanted to do this for a living. I grew up going to a normal secondary school before I went to stage school. I had really good friends. I was in a really good, what you'd call lad group of popular friends. I never thankfully got any stick at school. I was also close friends with another guy who was from my area of town, who then went on to be Billy Elliot and had a really successful movie career, which again, at the time, it wasn't any different for me because he was my friend and that's what I was used to. It was literally, we went from secondary school, my mum and my grandma took me and my sister flying the flag, still now here in Hartlepool. And it's literally, and I think I was always at that mindset of like, and my mum, God love her, has got that mentality of if you want to do something, you can do it, but you'll obviously have to work hard. And also, if you're from a little town like this, and there's no disregard to the town because there's a lot of famous people like from the town that have, like Wayne Sleep and people like that, that have come from the Northeast and the town before me. So it is done, and it was never a fame thing. It's mainly just a success thing, and I enjoy it, and I love presenting, I love radio, and I love being on the stage, and it's just one of them things, and I'm very lucky to get to do it now, do you know what I mean, professionally. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. I'm not saying it was easy. It's still like, obviously, you know yourself, we work in this industry, nothing's easy, which obviously that ties in with people having mental health in our industry, because it is up and down, emotions, financially, everything. And I think even just now in the forefront of this, the lockdown and the COVID-19 thing, I think a lot of people have suffered, but I think one of the main areas that is going to suffer and the things that one probably won't go back to normal for a while is theatre. It'll be the last thing to open. And I'm not saying that's the be all and end all, because everyone has other different jobs, but there is a lot of people that obviously do that job. And I'm not just talking about the people on stage, the marketing, behind the scenes, everything like that. It's almost like fell flat, and it's been switched off for now. Telly's coming back to normal and radio and things like that. But I think Well, in terms of the Northeast, I've had a lot, even with this campaign, I've had a lot of backing from the Northeast, which I think is great. I think another thing that obviously sometimes we don't understand things. I think I have a lot of friends who do what I would say normal jobs or muggle jobs, as I call them. But that's not offensive to them. They know I said that. Yeah. But I love that as well. But I also have a lot of theatrical friends, do you know what I mean? And people in my industry. But I think I've always had support. Like, I've got back in touch with a guy recently that I went to school with who just congratulated me about the campaign and stuff like that. Now, this is a really popular guy at school that I obviously was friends with. I stupidly said on the radio show that I fancied him, which obviously, you know yourself, when you say stuff on the radio, you have to be careful because you don't know who's listening. But that in turn's brought us back together, and he's from the town. He works away on an oil rig. But I think that's just a really classic example of someone who I looked up to school as being the really good-looking, popular boy I would never be friends with out of school, which I've said that to him, but now we've struck up a bond over mental health of all things just to show support. And he's a guy, and he was like, look, I'm really proud of what you're doing. So I think in general, really, I've got a lot of friends here still in Newcastle and things like that. So I think I think we're getting there. We are getting there. It's things like radio and TV and the papers and press have been really, really good with the campaign. So it's just getting it out there in all different forums for people to see and read.
Hashtag here for you. There's a here for you Facebook page. Also, just follow that hashtag with the number 4, that is, and the letter U. On Insta, it's Westwood Dan. That's at Westwood Dan. If you want to find Dan on Instagram there, but use that hashtag across Twitter. You could post your own videos as well. You're an ambassador for Mine now. You got a schools tour, which I guess has been curtailed somewhat by lockdown and so on and so forth. Presumably, that's going to be hopefully up and running again come reopening of schools, whenever that might be, Dan.
Yeah, I'm going back onto that. It's been prepped. I've done a few. What I would say practice goes, obviously it's what I didn't actually plan was how nerve-wracking it is to speak in a school assembly when you have to work in theatre and stuff like that, or radio and TV, because your audience is school kids, which is probably one of the hardest audiences to A, gain attention, and B, please. So yeah, that's going to be picked up soon. And then we've got a podcast coming out as well, which is fab. It's just different avenues to target, obviously, people, unopen people's conversation to get the stigma kind of like erased, really. But I wanted to target schools, obviously, because they're obviously the next generation. And there is, like I said before, there is a lot of pressure in schools with Instagram and social media and things like that. So we wanted to go in and talk to them direct, to maybe look at it a different way. And I think, because there'll be kids obviously suffering right now, especially in lockdown and in school assemblies with anxiety, but I think obviously they're not as equipped as adults. And even myself, I wasn't this educated on a year ago. So I think the more you can learn, the better, really. So
absolutely. Well, we're all absolutely on a journey with this one as well. Dan, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us on Mental Health Monday. Best of luck with the campaign and where it goes to next. As I say, people can find that through Facebook. I'll put links on my social media at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me on Facebook as well. And Dan, I'm sure we'll speak again. Good luck with everything, the podcast, the schools tour and everything in between.
100%. Thank you so much for having me on.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. SHOUT to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.